Thank you everyone for coming, and thank you so much for, you know, putting together such an amazing event. Me and Adam were just discussing about this. It's really hard to find a venue where the profile of the attendee is like impossible to define. You know, and that's fantastic, because it's this emergent mashup of a space where you feel like, wait, I don't think I'm going to have anything common with that person. Here's this hacker, you know, who doesn't have any place to live and is moving around and that sort of thing. And then suddenly when you hear them talk, I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly what I've been trying to do as well. Like, we should talk. So, which is this like really, really amazing emergent synergy. Okay, so I'll stop gushing now, and you know, but thank you to the Ars team. They, you have, guys are like freaking rocking, so thank you.
Yeah.
Basically, the background story of this is that I was in India this summer, that's where I'm from, and I was there for 45 days, and I had a month, and I didn't know what to do, and I was alone in my room, so, you know, you do what you do, and then since you're an academic, you write about it, so, you know, and then of course, you know, people are like, oh, you're doing philosophy, you're theorizing stuff, that's just intellectual masturbation, and I'm like, well, you know, ultimately it matters, so I just thought I'm going to put two and two together, and here it is, voila. So basically I'm going to talk about this masturbation. Before I go ahead and talk about it, there are certain boundaries, not saying what I don't mean by that. So I'm not going to kind of go and say this is what I mean, but rather this is not what I mean, or what those are the sort of boundaries. The first one is, it's not about theories. I'm not going to talk about Freud saying that, oh, you know, I didn't get enough love, so therefore I'm completing and blah, blah, blah. Meta theories, no importing of external knowledge. The second one is, this is not about percentages. I'm also not going to say, well, these many people masturbate in this particular way and these many people don't, and that sort of stuff. So this is not about percentages. It's not about that. But it's not about philosophy either. It's not about the grand theorizing of that sort of stuff. To be explicitly clear, I am not saying that these are not useful. These are fantastically useful and they're really, really good. But there is a different perspective which can offer us a different insights. Each of these particular things has something to offer from their own perspective, and then taking a different perspective, and that is what I'm going to talk. And that perspective is basically phenomenology. The guy whom you see here, his name is Edmund Husserl. He's a mathematician / philosopher. He belongs to the Frankfurt School. Anyway, he was the founder of this, or he officially termed this word phenomenology. I apologize. I know this is a really diverse crowd, so me trying to talk in very basic terms is not an insult to your intellectual level or your philosophical knowledge, but more to kind of set the ground level of discussion for all of us, so please bear with me. So phenomenology, very simply put, this is the concept sort of like, you know, the study of structures of consciousness as experienced from the first person point of view. So this is a very simple, basic definition of what phenomenology is. And this is not philosophy. This is not about numbers and percentages. This is not about exported theory. What this is it's about the experienced, the very immediate sense of experience. You are not stepping outside of the experience and looking at yourself and doing that, but how do we experience the very stuff? And that is something which all of us have, because we're all living, breathing consciousness. And this common thing is that we have experiences. And that is sort of, and then it's from a first person, oh, I should also have warned, this has full frontal male nudity. So if you're being offended, please turn that side. Oops, sorry. Anyway, if you're being offended, then I think you're in the wrong venue. So, anyways, but the idea is not that all this theory and percentages and everything else, they're really useful, but it also comes with this disclaimer of this sort of, disassociated observer. The subject or your research subject is doing something here, and I, as a researcher, I'm just like kind of writing it down. I'm not involved in that. Whereas phenomenology is like exactly kind of taking it upside down and saying, no, you write about what you experience. So there's no way of saying that it's not about universal claims, it's not about saying the transcendent experience, but it's very much about what I experience from my first person point of view. And then I had this idea of structures of consciousness. I mean, when I actually designed the slide, I played with the colors a little bit. It's not showing very clearly that it's differently highlighted. It doesn't matter. Anyway, it's about the structures of consciousness. What exactly we mean by this, we'll come back to this. But right now, the thing which I wanted to focus on is this. This is about the experience itself. And this is about first-person point of view. And that's what I want to talk about. And moving forward, based on that, the question which I ask is, what does it mean to masturbate? We're all doing it, hopefully. But this is sort of how I'm approaching it. And then, if you think about it, all we have is theories and numbers to explain that sort of stuff. The theories are like, well, it's really good for your system. It's a good stress reliever. And all this is true, and it's fantastic, and it's, absolutely amazing. We have this knowledge. But how do we experience it? How do you explain something like an experience of masturbating to someone or to yourself? How do you make sense of that? Now, that is sort of what I'm kind of like very curious about. And basically, what I did, as I said, I'm going to give you a background of what exactly I did. And before we move forward, there's certain things which I want to talk about, which is terminology. There's this idea, when I was starting to looking forward to writing this, I looked at, I tried reading something and everything while I was, writing this. And they came up with this onanism, which is a technical or philosophical term for masturbation. And if you actually look at it, it's very rooted in Judeo-Christian traditions. For people who do not know, I'm just going to give you a background. Basically, there was this guy called Onan, and he married his brother's wife, and he fucked her, and that was a sin. So basically, what he did is he would just pull out before he ejaculated, and therefore the sperm would fall down, not into the vessel. Therefore, it was still a sin. And technically, he was not having sex because he didn't, ejaculate it into her. So that was considered still as a sin. Basically, not depositing the sperm in a vagina is onanism. And that kind of later got reapproved, which means blowjobs were out of the question. So the basic idea is that I didn't want to use that term because it already has way too much baggage and theory of what it means to masturbate. And it's very, very kind of heterosexual, hegemonious, blah, 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 all the negative things you can associate with it. So I was like, okay, let's drop that. And I said, okay, I'm just going to go with masturbation. But then again, it becomes, again, tricky. Because what do you do when, two people are sitting and masturbating together? And there, are you actually masturbating or... How about mutual masturbation? So things get a little bit trickier over there. So I kind of went with this idea of what I call self-pleasure. And then again, masturbation implies very gentle sort of, localized gentle sort of erotic experience. And it also implies that you need to orgasm. It's always kind of has this, masturbation is complete only when you orgasm. Somehow me touching my tits and kind of feeling eroticized and feeling pleasure out of it is still sort of not masturbatory, but leading to that. So there's this always sort of like this goal is to come, and that is always seems to be sort of everything else is sort of building towards that, and somehow that's how we model our experience of it. And I also wanted to get out of that and say, so that's why I try to use the word self-pleasure, and that is vague enough and ambiguous enough and fluid enough to kind of include many things. So that's the terminology, and why masturbation? I could have picked a lot of things, but why does he decide to do this? Well, this is a bit of a generalization, but I'm just going to make it. It's pretty much universal, not just in the human species, but in a lot of other species too. And there are lots of psychological research done about like how infants touch their genitals, because it is a form of, you know, some sort of, because the first thing they do is that when they touch themselves, they start realizing they have a corporeal existence. And then that is really, really something very powerful. The same way when a child looks at the mirror for the first time, it's kind of completely engrossed in that, because it shows its own existence in a very different form. And so that's why this it's a very safe to say universal conditions apply sort of stuff. That universal is a, you know, masturbation is a very universal experience. All of us hopefully are still masturbating, you know, but. The important thing is my research is taking the trajectory of what Ali and Dan were talking about earlier, and also ties back to the other talks over here, is it kind of boils down to this. Trying to understand consciousness and its relationship with technology. And that's a very, very, very elusive sort of framing to do research. Probably I'll be there for 15 more years doing my PhD. But this is what interests me. It's what makes my heart beat faster, so I'm going to go with that. But the idea then is that when I look at people having sex or, you know, other sort of stuff, we immediately sort of bring in a lot of elements, and that's good, you know, but when you're having sex with someone, there's lots of other elements involved. Like, you don't know if it's love, if it's lust, it's desire, it's emotional capital, it's social capital, as, you know, she pointed out. There's lots of other sort of elements. So I really, really kind of want to make, you know, kind of point something where I can just study desire. This is what desire is, and kind of point to that. And masturbation, I'm not saying masturbation does not involve these elements, but it seems to kind of be more open and less sort of tied down to these elements. So that's why I kind of define self-pleasure as it's for the self, by the self, and through the self. Because, you know, you have to actually utilize it. You can't just like sit, well, I can't, but, you know, you know, most of you are brain probes here, so, you know, you just sit and read Foucault and masturbate. So, you know, I do. I know, right? Yay for sapient sexuality, man. You know, but it's a very embodied experience. You have to use your body to masturbate. There's no getting around that. As simple as that. You know, so it's that is why it's very much within the bounds of your bounded existence as a single individual. And I really kind of wanted to get that. That's the reason why I chose masturbation. Like a good academic, I should disclose my study details. Really bizarre pictures I was looking for this, but it kind of goes with. There's this technique called autoethnography, which, if you're, you know, familiar with social sciences, is basically you're conducting ethnography, but on your own experiences. And it's a valid form of technique, it's accepted, blah, 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 and there's a way to do it and that sort of stuff. And basically what I did is this, I kept a 30-day journal. I jerked off, and then I kept a journal entry about, every time I jerked off, I kept a journal entry about things and said like, okay, this is what I did and blah, blah, that sort of stuff. And I kept this for 30 days and, you know, that's kind of what I did. And my mom was thinking I was doing research, which I was. So, you know, before we move forward, conditions apply. The condition is that every single thing I say here is based on my own subjectivity. And that is not a bad thing. That is the most strongest thing I can offer through this particular study, because it takes the phenomenological approach. So every single claim I make, if it's offensive to anyone and that sort of stuff, it's not an attempt to generalize or create transcendent sort of truths, but to say how I experience this and what can I kind of bring about in terms of understanding that. And I'm kind of, what I did is, like, after these 30 days, I kind of went through all this data and then looked at it. And then I saw three sort of emergent modes, I want to call them, of experiencing when I was in this, when I was jerking off. There were three sorts of major modes. These are, like, really, you know, umbrella terms. But I also want to point out that these three are experientially inseparable. What do I mean by that is, like, it doesn't mean that I'm in mode one and then I switch over to mode two and then I switch over to mode three. But in one single instant, I'm experiencing all three. There's no way while you're in the experience for you to kind of distinguish between these three and say, oh, right now I'm that, right now I'm this, and right now I'm that. Whereas in some points, a mode is more higher than the other one. So it's more background than foreground. We'll talk more about it once I kind of get through that. So mode one is what I call self-in-situ. It's just basically in situation, which is basically our normal, what I would assume as mostly how I started, is basically, you know, you either watch porn some other previous sexual experiences where you're trying to kind of, you know, bring it up again and then try and play it in your mind and then substitute and get, you know, you jerk off and get off from that, or a fantasized sort of thing. But the common experience between all three of these is that it's very situational. The situation, the context is what actually gets you off. Someone in a particular position, looking at someone with their leg up like that, where you are looking from a particular angle. It's not a generalized profile of a dick. It's not a generalized profile of a balls. But it's from a very specific point of view. It's very situated. It's very much grounded. You don't have transcendent imagination. It's very grounded. You're thinking about fucking someone in a college library. It's you imagine, you see the books there, you see everything is extremely grounded. And that is very imaginative, even though you have probably have experienced that before. You know, if you probably got a blowjob in a library, you have experienced that, but you're bringing it back in a very specific way and playing it out in your mind in a very specific way and getting, you know, satisfaction out of it in a very specific way. So it's very situated. It's about the situation. It's about the context. It's all about the details. And the self here is very focused on the self. It's about how this particular experience and how I am a part of this situation. The major kind of, the way I'm thinking about it is like, you know, how is that going to make me feel? How look at me, I'm doing that. So it's very focused on the self. And that's okay. And as I told, the example is porn. You know, usually when you watch porn, that's the meta-narrative of pornographic cultural theory sort of stuff. It's like, you know, when two girls are going at it, it's not just the straight guy's fantasy to just watch the girls go at it, but the narrative there is that those two women are missing the man and I am the man to give it to them. And that is, the absence is so present there. And that is already kind of scripted into it with the idea that you will kind of, you know, literally and metaphorically slide yourself between those two women. And, you know, so, and that is the sort of in-situ imagination where the self is kind of going through. So this is the mode one, which I kind of observe, which is very common. Most of my normal masturbatory sort of experiences kind of falls in this way. And I kind of think for most people that is true as well. Now we're going to talk about mode two, what I call a self for other, where it's about empathy. And this also happens where, you know, the way I look at myself as a sexual self is not just about me, but how am I making the other person feel? While I'm kind of blowing someone, when they moan, that makes me really, really kind of going. Now, what is happening there is that there's a connection of empathy there. You are sort of viciously as well, depending on what you're into. But what is happening there is the self, you're understanding your sexual self as how you make, how, with respect to the other, how good am I at pleasuring the other? How good am I at, like, kind of trying to bring the other person to screaming, moaning, scratching orgasms? And this is also something which we normally don't, it's really hard to do it while you're masturbating, because it's like, well, there's no other, like, how do you, even though you can imagine something, like, you know, I've had experiences where my partner or partners were screaming because of what I did to them, in good and bad ways, but that in itself was a very erotic, like, I'm sort of good, and I made them do that, and that is how I see myself. So the self is for the other, there's empathy involved here, and a clear example of that would be camphor.com. I don't know how many of you, you know about this site. It's a camming website. Basically, what you do is you go there, you know, guys and women and all sorts of people jerk off or do sexual acts, and you can chat with them, and, you know, you can also pay them. There's this whole sort of thing. It's a pretty big site. But the idea here, once I kind of got tired of porn, just like camphor.com, because it's there, you can see, you can type, and they can sort of... Now the idea of masturbation is already sort of blurring here, because it's like, is it masturbation if the other person's involved, but only virtually involved? Like, how does that, what's the difference between that and porn? So already here it's starting to blur a little bit, depending upon how you define. And the thing with camphor.com, which I really like, is that the person who's jerking off, their main source of, I've been on both sides, you know, giving as well as just watching and getting off as well. So while I was kind of, you know, jerking off for other people, the pleasure, complete pleasure here, is kind of knowing for the fact that right now there are 47 people who are watching me and doing whatever they are doing. And I am bringing that. There's an instant collective consciousness which you tap into there. Your entire sense of erotic comes from knowing the fact that 47 people are probably jerking off, watching me jerk off. And, you know, again, we are going to leave all the theories and everything outside of it. You call it good, you call it bad, you call it sexual empowerment. I'm not going to talk about that because that's not within the experience. The experience itself is that my major turn-on right now is that people are watching me jerk off, and that's making them go. And that's a thing. And the idea there, the emotion, the intention felt there is empathy. And that's where it kind of gets there. And the thing which I want to point out here is that without a technology like camming, without a technology like camphor.com, this sort of desire is hard to achieve. And that's sort of the underlying sort of, you know, and it's not just that this is just a tool to kind of do that, but this sort of, and this was my previous talk as well, technologies are not just tools to satisfy desires, but they bring with themselves new forms of desire. And that's really, really cool. It was really hard to achieve while we were in probably bathhouses and stuff. But the way that particular relation, a cam-to-cam sort of, you know, jerking off session, that sort of sexual relation, that sort of experiencing yourself as a particular kind of sexual being is brought with the technology of cam. Without cam, that doesn't exist. And that's really, really cool. Anyway, we'll get back to that. But this is sort of, I kind of cheated and said, like, you know, there are only three, but there are actually four, but I put them as like 2A and 2B. So this is 2A, which is a very academic thing to do. This is 2A, which is self for the other, and but there's, it's sort of like, you know, two sides of the coin. There is also the self to the other, which is again empathetic, and which is again through camphor.com. And this, you know, but this, you, it's not just about me seeing that, okay, that person is turned on by me. And this probably, I don't know how many of you have watched heterosexual porn, but, you know, in this crowd, that's not a safe assumption to make. But there are definitely certain sort of, even gay porn sometimes, you know, the guy is going, and then there are all these mirrors, you know. So, and there comes an instant where the guy looks at himself and flexes his muscle and looks at how he is fucking and then keeps going. Can you all recollect that particular scene? Yeah. So now what is happening here? I mean, yeah, we can judge and say, like, he's a narcissistic bastard, like, you know, blah, 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 and so. But we are not doing theories, we are not doing values. But what is happening within the experience of this? You are seeing yourself as a sexual being through the eyes of the other. The self is constituted through the eyes of the other. I am not just kind of seeing myself as like, oh, these people are kind of getting off me, but I am seeing that person finds me sexy. I am that which gets them off. So there's this sort of like self for the other, let me give to you, but there's also self through the other, which is like, I understand my identity as a sexual person and derive sexual pleasure through the eyes of the other. Now, whether or not the other person actually finds me attractive, or that is irrelevant, because you are constructing the other as well, and then seeing yourself through that, it doesn't matter. But within the experience, you construct the other, see yourself through the eyes of that, and that's how it gets reflected. All of it goes all the way to Hegel, like, you know, undifferentiated consciousness, if you're into that. Except that he went crazy later. So, well, you know, all these people do. But this is sort of the second sort of thing which I was getting at. Now, so far was what I would call my normal repertoire of wanking of 20 years. But, you know, after, I was talking with Adam about this earlier, so after 10 days of keeping journal about you wanking off, it's really fucking hard. Because what happens after 10 days is I was able to see my patterns, and it was so sad. Because all you really, really are jerking off is to, is like, probably 7 or 8 narratives in your head. And even in the porn, your selection of porn is like, oh, I like that. So there's already sort of scripts which are there. And we think we're just like, oh, I'm so fluid. I'm like, I'm so sexually explorative. And then you're like writing things down, and within 10 days, oh my fucking God, this is depressing. Like, all I have are like 7 or 8 scripts, and that's what you keep playing again and again in your mind. And then it became this thing like, okay, it's almost gonna be midnight, I need to do my journal entry for today, I need to jerk off, I really need to do this. Like, you know, never in my life I thought it would be so hard to jerk off. But it was really fucking hard, because basically what was happening here was that there are specific structures which I kind of see myself as a sexual being through my consciousness, and that's how I've always kind of looked at myself as developed. And now I'm trying to break and go beyond that. It's scary, and it's also really fucking hard, because you think this is your universe, and to have the idea of something that is beyond the universe is kind of saying your universe is not the universe. Am I kind of making sense? It's really, really kind of, and then like I really had to think of innovative ways of like, what the fuck can I do to jerk off? What more can I do? And it was really hard, and I searched really deep, you know? But it's, the thing that happened to me, the breakthrough was, when I kind of referred back to saying, like, how did my jerking off habits over a period of time kind of develop? And, you know, I come from a very small town in India. While I was in my high school, I didn't have access to internet. I did go to a Catholic all-boys school, so that was enough, you know. probably that's why I turned out gay, you know. but the idea was I didn't have these sort of externalized sort of media and that sort of stuff. And I realized that one of the things I used to do was kind of like jerk off in front of the mirror. And I, over a period of time, I stopped doing that for whatever reason, because, you know, like, again, it's just laziness instead of, you know, well, someone can kind of stimulate me. Why do I need to work? I can just turn on porn and just, you know, do it with. It's almost really, really sad. It's like heating up leftover Chinese food. You pop in and then heat it up and then kind of eat it and go to bed. So it's, you know, it does become like that sometimes, you know. But that's when I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And that was when I had my mode three, my breakthrough. The self for itself. And this is super sort of played with everything I knew and everything I structured myself and categorized. It kind of blew all the categories I had in my mind to understand my sexual stuff. It's not that big a deal. But if you analytically sort of step back and see what is happening, the distinction between the subject and the object is not very clear anymore. Basically, I kind of like, you know, spread myself over a mirror and looked at myself and jerked off. Now, here's the thing. What am I jerking off to? This living, breathing, sexual being, which is kind of getting pleasure, but it's also, so it's like, I don't know, a more purified version of masturbation, because not only it's just you, the content which you use for masturbating is also you. You know, I'm not saying this is a pure, you know, oh, this is the best version of masturbation. But for me, it was like, okay, what does this mean? Like, you know, this is really interesting for me, because the idea of subject and object doesn't work anymore. That dichotomy of like, you are the observed and I'm observing you, or you are the pleasured and I'm pleasuring you. So all this sort of like completely collapses. That discourse doesn't work anymore. And for me, it really was still very hard to pinpoint saying that this is what that experience was. And the same goes for the desire and the desire. What is the desire and what is being desired here? That was really, really sort of very hard to pinpoint when I was doing this. And all it took for me was like mirror. It's still a technology, a very old technology. But, you know, but what is happening here is that the self is sort of seen for itself. And that doesn't happen very often in our normal day-to-day interactions with technologies. The self doesn't get revealed for itself in many different ways. And I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I'm just saying, well, there is something which is not yet explored. Maybe we should kind of have a look at it. What does it mean? And this right now is my completely personal sort of experience. I'm not generalizing it. When I jerk off to the previous sort of stuff, there always, after you're done, there always was a come down of some sort. Here, there was nothing of that sort. And there, something kind of happens. You know, all these people talking about masturbation is self-love, it's empowering, it's healing, and, you know, in a very spiritual sort of way as well. Then I felt like I could sort of feel like, okay, there is something there. There's the idea, there's a self-sufficiency which comes in. Again, I am not advocating saying that you all stop masturbating to porn. Please don't do that. But the idea is, these are different modes of experiencing things. And these have very different insights that reveal insights about ourselves and our consciousness in very different ways. And that's what is very interesting to me. And for me, the idea of like, okay, that makes lots of sense. So I just decided to write about it. But, you know, and this as well, this picture, like when someone's, if someone could do that, you know, bastards, you know, you know, I would never leave my home if I could do that. But wait, you could do that?
No.
Exactly. But, you know, whatever.
But it
Yeah, I guess. And then there's this other thing of, which probably Ned and Maggie could talk about. Like, once you are kind of a performer, when you look at yourself performing, if that turns you on, it's like, you know, that's also very interesting, but I will leave it to them. But my question is, so what does all this mean? Is it just like, okay, you know, they're just masturbating and writing about it, but what does all this mean? And I want to give very, like, three or four very concrete examples to show how technology is kind of playing, and we have this idea of there's this human being, and then there's this technology, and then it interacts, and somehow the surrounding space is what gets affected. And if you take an experiential point of view, you first of all see that the subject-object distinction is not very clear. Where the subject ends and where the object ends is not very clear. Nowadays, we all don't even think about, you know, wearing glasses as a technology. But where does the subject end? If your entire worldview is going to depend upon how you use this particular technology, isn't that a part of your subjectivity? And there's no sort of, well, you can always argue, I can always take it off, and you know, that sort of stuff. But experientially speaking, it's really, really experientially impossible to kind of separate these two. And that's sort of what I'm getting at. It's like technology is not this sort of external thing, which is just sort of like, you know, helping us do things. But it's a little bit more complex than that. And that's the reason why I want to present like three or four very concrete examples to show. The first one is Grindr, which most of you probably already know. It's a online quote-unquote dating site, which is basically code for hookup. So basically what you do is that you download this app and you log into that creator profile. It's a GPS-based system. So if I'm here logged in and if someone else is there logged in and they say, hey, you want to hook up, so you just go there. But it's based upon how proximate, how close we are to each other, because it's map-based. Now, this seems like, oh, okay, well, that's just another sort of silly app. But if you step back and think about it, let's take a very specific scenario. I'm in the mall. Normally, you don't think of a mall as a sexual space. Now, I'm in the mall, and there's another dude who's sending me a message. Suddenly, the way I understand my environment of the mall becomes very sexual. And it's not just sexual in that particular context. It plays into the whole experience. I am getting a blowjob in the mall. Now, that is a part of the whole sort of, yeah, I know, wow, awesome. Libraries are better. I live in a university town. I can't be picky. So, you know. I know. But, it suddenly becomes a part. It's not just about the external stuff. It becomes a part of the sexual experience itself. Now, what is happening? This technology is redefining space itself. It's redefining sexual spaces itself. Previously, a bathhouse was a sexual space. A library was not. A mall was not. Not at least in a, you know, very mainstream sort of way, but suddenly this makes that possible. You're in an airport lounge, you're waiting for your flight, and somebody pops in, and then you're like, well, suddenly the airport lounge is a sexual space. You understand and live and experience the world around you in a very, very different way, and this makes it possible. And that is a very significant shift. That's not just about hooking up anymore. That's about redefining what hooking up is. That's about redefining how we make sense of sexual spaces. The second one is the fleshlight. There are fans of it. There are people who hate it. And I don't want to get into that. But one of the things which I want to point out is that a little bit of personal information, well, at this point there's nothing personal, you know, so, is that I am I am uncircumcised. And it's really sort of hard for me to use the fleshlight because the tip of my penis is very sensitive to use this. Now, the interesting thing here was that how suddenly my penis head became labeled as sensitive. Because before using the fleshlight, I never thought of myself as having a, you know, of that. Because, you know, when I got blowjobs, it was fine. It was enjoyable. I never had any problem with that. Suddenly, this sort of technology comes in, and it carries within itself a soul. And if you look at, as far as my understanding, and I'm, you know, my research is on sex toys as well, design of sex toys. Almost all of the, first of all, there are very little toys for designed specifically for men. You know, probably dildos and butt plugs. And if you're into the S&M scene, then you have all the gear, which is sort of all over the place. And even within that, where was I going with this? Okay, yeah. Even within that, there are inbuilt scripts. Most of the dildos are circumcised. Most of the sex toy sleeves are for men who are circumcised. And there is a very specific, and there are certain toys which is like really, really poorly built, but unless you're of a certain girth and a length, the toy doesn't work. And then the interesting thing, I want to come back to that, is like how suddenly my penis head got labeled as sensitive by myself. No one else did it. And then how that shift, so now we are understanding our bodies based upon how the technology kind of plays into it. And then, you know, that's, you know, not to be hard on myself or not to be like critical and shake my angry fist at people and that sort of stuff, because production is really hard and stuff. But that also says that there is almost no, there is almost little diversity when it comes to production of toys. And this is specifically true because most of the toys which are designed are for cisgender people with cisgender genitalia. So, like, you know, lots of people here would know about the problems with that. Like, even something like getting a harness for a person with, you know, penis is so fucking hard because either you don't have a penis and then have a harness. So it's always like all these scripts, and, you know, this crowd should know that more. So anyway, that was kind of my point about the fleshlight. The third example I want to use is this thing called the real touch. I'm not sure how many people know about this. So it's sort of like the fleshlight, except that this giant thing over here, it's powered electronically, and you put in a USB card, and there is porn playing. So when the porn actress is actually giving a blowjob, the simulated version also sort of gives you a blowjob. And so it goes accordingly, and that's it. And then they have kind of developed it further where you can have a live chat, where on the other side, the model will have something what they call as a joystick. So if she presses that, you can actually feel it through the internet. You can feel it clasp on your penis and that sort of stuff. Now, here again, and they have specific sort of porn DVDs which you can use, which will give you, like, if you want to feel how it feels like to butt fuck, then they have a specific sort of DVD for that. If you have a titty fuck, then they have a specific sort of that for that. So they have different sorts of, you know, that's all. But the idea I'm getting here at is that, now what is masturbation? Now, what is this masturbation? What is it? And that becomes extremely hard. And then that's okay. Because we're playing with the so-called what we define as the rigid boundary. It's like masturbation means one guy jerking off and that's it. Well, it still is, but what happens when like technologies like this explicitly start playing with the boundaries? And here what I wanted to again point out is, here, the very sexual act itself is being redefined. So we first we have the environment, next we have the self, and now we have the sexual act in itself is also being redefined. The third one is what, this is actually one of my friends, Mads, and he is also doing his PhD in Denmark, I believe, and this is his PhD dissertation, which is called The Mediated Body. I'll just show a very short clip of this. Hopefully it works.
What are we doing now?
I don't know.
I think we're just trying different from new settings, new people, new kind of. I mean, we tried it out, tried Nightline, tried Harmony.
Okay, so what is happening here is he's putting on the headphones on this lady, and then he's carrying this sort of capacitor. So when you touch the other's body, only the two people can hear noise soundscapes only for them. So it's just communicated only between them. So now what is happening, what I want you to pay attention to is like how they touch each other's body and how they experience the body itself. And these are complete strangers.
What is that?
So you can find this online and stuff. You can learn more about it. He's a pretty cool guy, and this is a very cool project as well. But the thing which I didn't want to end saying that, oh my God, all these bastards are changing the way we understand. It's not in a negative way. But there's also positive things. Things like how the idea of going and touching a stranger and not just touching, but in a very sort of intimate way, and only two of you can hear what is going on, the soundscape. So there's already this sort of mentally synced up, physically kind of felt experience. It becomes this very sort of intimate experience with a complete stranger, and how this technology sort of makes it okay. This is an okay thing to do. Very simple thing. Like, I always get weirded out when I go and sit in a bus seat when somebody just got up and their butt heat is still there and I feel yucky about it. And most of you have experienced this because it's like, ew, no, like, you know, but it's okay, whatever. But here is another thing. Two complete strangers sharing a very sort of intimate experience, and the technology makes this possible. It's redefining not only intimacy in a way, but the situations and the rules for negotiation is also very much redefined. So it's not all bad stuff, that is not the point of it, but the point of trying to say this is that technology plays a central role in how we experience and make sense of ourselves, our bodies, other beings, and the world around us. So it plays a very key and central role in all of these. And that's a huge fucking role. That's a really, really big fucking role. It's not just about, oh, I could get off in different ways, which is really, really important. But how we understand ourselves, it has a bigger implication of how we make sense of ourselves as well. And as we have seen it, technologies carry within themselves certain ideologies and value orientations as well. While I was looking for pictures, it was so fucking hard to find non-white, non-circumcised, non-six-pack abs sort of model to put in there, and that in itself is saying a lot. It was so hard to kind of find that, and there's all these value orientations which we don't normally question, and that is sort of, and this is a slide which I pretty much now have standard in all my presentations. It's like, you know, sexual technology is really good. Just because we are creating more and more sexual technologies doesn't mean that we are being more and more sexually liberated. That is not the idea. This is the famous Foucault quote. We must not think by saying yes to sex that we are saying no to power. In fact, one of the biggest modes of power working is through sex. And, you know, people pointed out about, like, reproductive technologies and something, which is a big thing right now in the U.S. with the elections and stuff. But it's not just about an individual. I want to conclude by saying that this is not just about an individual getting off, which is also super important. But as we saw, it's a collective consciousness. Every single time when I step into the chat room, it's not just about me getting off, it's not just about that person getting off, but there is a moment where 1 + 1 becomes more than 2. There is an instant collective consciousness which kind of happens, where everyone in the room also knows that a guy is jerking off in front of 47 people, and all of us are tapped into that sort of experience right there. And that goes beyond that. That goes beyond the individual's understanding of stuff. And that is a big deal. That is a really, really fucking big deal, because it's redefining what it means to be sexual. And then, therefore, I end by saying, we need more, you know, this is the standard sort of any sort of cultural critique thing. We need more awareness, yeah. But when it comes to designing technologies, we need more accountability. And we need to have a more conscious dialogue. It's not just about me sitting here and preaching, you guys are all bastards doing it all wrong. But no, the idea is, like, I am also a sex toy designer. I know how fucking hard it is to design a particular toy, because toys cannot be generic. So there's always someone going to be left out. So how do you do it more consciously and more ethically and more pragmatically? This needs to happen. You just can't sit and theorize about it endlessly. That's sort of the deal. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, wonderful talk. There will be questions. I assume so. My first comment is that I grew up in Europe as part of the death cult, and it was a sort of fantasy. And this death cult has, especially in Austria, a very interesting aspect, because it's kind of like the state religion. There's still state and religion is kind of separated, but because there's so many Catholics, there is kind of like an opt-out religious, like Catholic, the Catholic classes in elementary school and schools. You can, of course, opt out if you don't want to do that, but of course everyone does it, because it's just like, that's what you do,
yeah.
And you listen to all that crazy stuff. And when I started masturbating, which was exactly the same time when I became an atheist, was...
you found God in a different way.
We had our Catholic class books, yeah? They were specifically talking about masturbation,
mm-hmm.
Which in German is actually called onanie,
uh-huh.
Or it's gender, like onanie for men. So there's an interesting, I don't know why. So there's this one page where they refer to, because the problem with Catholicism nowadays is they don't have too much power anymore, so they cannot tell you should not masturbate,
mm-hmm.
because their power is gone,
mm-hmm.
but at least they can make you feel
bad about it,
stuff.
Yeah.
And, which is kind of like control society right there. And the specific line in my Catholic class book was, masturbation is not per se bad for a young person, but a young person should do it in a respectful way.
Okay.
And I always try to figure out what the fuck do they mean with that. The respectful way, just like...
I don't know, wear a bow tie?
Consciousness, I'm like, okay, I have to be respectful, I don't know. Yeah, but that in itself is a king.
I don't know, wear a bow tie on your dick while you masturbate, I suppose. You know?
Maybe I don't have to be respectful to God or something.
You know, people usually scream his name while they come, so you'll be off. But yeah, I do. There's a whole complete spiel about how different religions specifically kind of look at masturbation, because they're definitely, at least in India, they're definitely more smaller communities. Where it's seen as a rite of passage, you know, not anymore though, but, you know, before colonization and stuff, when a person comes of a certain age, the elder would actually teach the person how to masturbate. And that was a ritual ceremony. It was kind of saying, you are now officially an adult and you are becoming an adult, and a big part of the bounty of existence given to you is to experience yourself as a sexual person, and here's the good way of doing that. So, and that is not there anymore, which is really sad. So, yeah, please teach your kids how to masturbate.
Oh, yeah. I will have, my dad caught me masturbating when I was 15 in my room. I could never lock my room, there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you started.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That was an insult.
Yeah.
I was 15, come
on. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question. You seem, first of all, I thought that was a wonderful presentation.
Thank you.
Incredibly self-aware. When you talk about the come down,
mm-hmm.
after the first two moments,
mm-hmm.
Could you talk more about what you think is going on there and why it wouldn't happen?
Okay, this is a little bit tricky without getting into other stuff. Because it's so, in my head itself, I have got to be honest here, in my head itself, it's sort of hard for me to purely stay within the experience to describe that, because that is one of the hardest things with phenomenology, is that we are surrounded with so much of noise, which is unaware of our knowledge, that it's hard to kind of stay within the experience, because you're always like, oh, does this mean this? And you're not in the experience anymore. And then, but the meta-narrative is my understanding is that there's so much of alienation, which means that the burden, and this is super meta-narrative, and you know, this is just me rambling here, so please don't quote me, is that the burden of existing as an individual consciousness is always on us. It's always on us, whether we are aware about it, and this is the whole spiel about all these philosophers agonizing and that sort of stuff, and religions have been talking about that and stuff as well. But one of the powerful things that happens with sex, and why it is powerful, is that it gives an instance where that burden is lifted for a few minutes or a few seconds or whatever that is. Because my understanding is the way I grade as that was a really awesome sex was when I'm not actually thinking about what I'm doing at it, I'm just kind of going at it. And then what is happening there is that you are not seeing the self as an individual consciousness there, it's just a flux of things moving over there. And the interesting thing is that it is really hard to have that while you're having a hookup. It's easier because when you are exposing that sort of vulnerability, it's extremely hard. At least the social structures around us has made it. Like, you know, if I'm having a hookup, if I'm going to talk about really personal stuff about my experiential aspects, that dude's going to be like, can I go? So, you know, it's not socially acceptable to, like, even give your real name. That's the sort of level of alienation we're dealing with here. And for me, that's, And even with your life partner or something, that connection always doesn't happen. Because the moment you try and make it happen, it's gone. It's like you can try and make it happen. It just has to come on its own. And that's really hard. And it's kind of like a junkie, you know, like a junkie is always after that first high. And anyone who has experienced that moment of losing the individual consciousness, every time we are fucked, we are after that. We are after that moment of that. And for some people it happens, you know, again and again. For some people it doesn't. What is, from that perspective, when I'm jerking off to myself, it's pretty much also the awareness that I know all my own shit. So like, even when I want to kind of be open to someone, it can be really hard. hard because one, it can be hard, and two, it can also be like, I don't know. I don't know how to open up certain aspects of myself to someone. Whereas when I'm looking at myself, and this is how religion works, right? God knows everything. And the whole affinity towards God is that something, whether you believe in it or not, that's a completely different issue. Something knows everything about you and is accepting you that way. And that's a very powerful thing for all of us. Like, end of day, doesn't matter what you believe in, that's what we crave about. For all of us, it's, you know, this ties back to Dan and Mandy Stark as well. Is that, like, this is the ultimate sort of thing which we are all after. In every single thing which we do is that sort of complete acceptance. And every single time it falls short. Because it cannot come as an individual consciousness. I cannot in entirety accept you because it's beyond, because I'm a bounded consciousness. So, sort of, I don't know if that answered your question, but that's my experience of it. Is that when I'm with the self, it almost feels like, not that I'm saying I can connect with my consciousness better, but it's more like, that pretension and that sort of like, oh, I need to do this, is sort of gone. Because it's like, yeah, I know my own shit, and I know all the clever little stories I tell myself too. Like all this identity ego trips I go through and all that sort of stuff. That's not there. So you're sexy for yourself, and yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
I actually have more of a comment. You mentioned briefly about how like pretty much all sex toys are designed for cis people. And I was just thinking about how, like, basically, like, the fleshlight or getting a harness, like, I can either get a harness and be told that my anatomy is wrong, or I can get a fleshlight and be told that my gender is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that ends up blurring the distinction of masturbation for a lot of trans people, because if I want to masturbate with a toy, that means I'm engaging in a conversation with people who made this,
mm-hmm.
who have not included me in their design.
Yeah. No, you're spot on, like, you know, and this is a big deal while you're designing, is this idea of intentional user, who your user is. But, like, you know, these days, like, you know, no one's actually using anything the way it is intended to be. It's always the companies are like, oh shit, they just did this, and that's really cool than what we actually thought it is, so we're just going to take that and do that. So DIY, not exactly DIY, but reappropriation of use and redefinition is definitely a big part of that. So yeah, that's a very valid comment. Thank you. Yeah. Adam?
Very short question. So you made a very interesting comment about this discussion that, like, in really good sex, one often stops thinking about what one is doing.
For milliseconds.
Yeah, but certain moments. And so there's a question whether then, in terms of game of representation, the vast majority of games about sex are in fact leading people towards alienated and bad sex that is not bad.
I wouldn't put necessarily as bad sex, because that would be way too generalizing things. But what my, I'm not a big gamer as well, I'm not too familiar with the game literature as well, but one thing which I can kind of say is that most of these scripts work on reaffirming and kind of recreating identities. So consciousness kind of becomes this sort of stratified identity grid. So in that particular way, maybe, but I wouldn't put it as necessarily bad sex, because especially in role playing, the whole deal is all about, you know, the specifics of it. But yeah.
Thank you
so much. You've been a very kind audience.
You are really getting up.